Hello and welcome to the Pirate Party Australia webcast, dedicated to the discussion of freedom of information and culture, government transparency and civil liberties in the internet age. I'm Sam Kearns and this is episode number 12 for Sunday, 23rd of February, 2014. It's been a very long time between drinks here at the webcast news desk, and needless to say, it's been an eventful year for Pirate Party Australia in the meantime. We participated in our first ever federal election, among many other things. It was also a rather eventful year for me personally, which is why there has been no webcast, but you'll have to buy me a few drinks to get me to say any more about that. I'm not even going to try to recap what has happened in the world of pirate news in the 13 months between the last episode and this one, but there's plenty to talk about with what's going on right now, so let's get into it. Just 2 weeks ago, on the 8th of February, a by-election was held for the seat of Griffith in Queensland. This seat in the southern suburbs of Brisbane was held by former Prime Minister Kevin Rudd, who resigned shortly after his party lost the election last year. This set the stage for Pirate Party Australia to contest its first ever seat in the House of Representatives. Melanie Thomas was our candidate for Griffith election, and I've brought her on the webcast today to talk about her experience running for office. Hello, Melanie.
Hello, Sam.
Yeah, long time no speak. I first met you at the Congress last year, and I haven't really done much for the party since. How have you been in the meantime?
Been fantastic. So there's been a lot happening for me. As you know, I was voted to become deputy president of the Congress. So yeah. I've been busy doing that. I have also become state coordinator for Queensland. So I've been busy doing that. I've been the candidate for the federal election last year, running for the Senate in Queensland. And now I've been the candidate for Griffith. So it's been a huge, it's only been half a year. But a lot packed in, working for the party.
Yeah, wow. Well, we'll get onto the election shortly, but first, can you tell me a bit of the story about how you discovered and became involved in pirate politics?
Sure. So I've always been very political, but never joined a political party, and I'm sure people have heard my story before. But from a young age, you know, from when I left high school, when I was 18, I got involved with several environmental organisations, one of those being Wilderness Society. So I did a lot of volunteer work for them, working in their shops in both Brisbane and Cairns, attending protests, that kind of thing. I've done a lot of animal liberation kind of work and, you know, other protests, rallies, organisations over the years. There's also been times too where I've actually veered away and been, you know, busy with my career and busy with other things in my life. But fast forward to 2010, when WikiLeaks came to prominence, that's pretty much when I decided to ramp things up a little for myself. That's when it was a wake-up call for me, and I realised things were serious, I suppose. And that's when I started getting quite active, I guess, on social media too. I joined Twitter as well and just started joining in, you know, with what was happening there. And it was via Twitter that I discovered the Pirate Party, actually, and was following the party. And then there was a recruitment drive. It was like what we did recently to get members on board, join for free. So that prompted me to join, first political party I ever joined. And look, it just went from there.
So when was that? When did you join? What was the date?
It must have been around 2011, I think, from memory.
Okay, so you've been in the party a while before you actually like ran for president.
Yeah, not too long though. But yeah, no, I'm not. I haven't been around like some of the other members.
Yeah, well, I think you joined before me then, because I think I joined in January of 2012.
Okay.
Yeah, now, as we've mentioned, you know, you ran for the Deputy President's office and were voted in at the Congress in the middle of last year. And how have you been enjoying that role since?
Yeah, it's been fantastic. Really enjoying working with the National Council, and we work together really well. And considering we're all over Australia in different places, working as we do, primarily on IRC, can be challenging, but in general, there's so much that we achieve. It's been a fantastic experience. So yeah, absolutely loving it.
Now, on to the Griffith election. In the by-election, you placed fourth out of 11 candidates, which I think is a fantastic result. Congratulations.
Thank you.
How did you feel about the result? Did it meet or exceed your expectations?
Exceeded my expectations, definitely. I was hoping to get maybe 500 votes. That was my goal. I thought I would be happy if I got 500 votes.
Much better than that.
Yeah, so doubled it, which is fantastic. 500 votes seems to be the median for minor parties. So that's what I was looking at, and I was thinking as long as I came in alongside the other minors, it would be, acceptable. I thought 200 votes might be a bit embarrassing. coming in at over 1,000 was just amazing. It was such a great moment. We had an after party here at my place. We were all standing here, eyes glued to the TV. And when that appeared on the ABC, when they showed the results and I was there in fourth spot, you should have heard us here. They would have heard us down the end of the street, I'm sure. So it was fantastic. Brought the house down. Yeah, so it's a fantastic moment and is not what I expected at all.
All right. To put it into perspective, in September last year, when Pirate Party Australia stood for the Senate in the general election, we received around 0.3 to 0.6% of the vote across the various states where we stood, and 0.5% of the vote in Queensland. Now, at the Griffith by-election, you received 1.51% of the total, which makes you roughly four times as popular as our average candidate. Do you have any thoughts on what might have contributed to the increase in the pirate vote in this particular election?
Yeah, look, I think there might be a few factors going on. I guess I have sat there and tried to think about it a bit. First of all, Griffith is an interesting electorate. It's very large. Driving from one end to the other could even be about 20 k's. So it spreads from the inner city, a suburb called West End, which is a very progressive suburb, kind of like, Newtown in Sydney or Fitzroy in Melbourne. You drive out 20 k's, you get to the more affluent suburbs, and then there's more working class in between, so it's very varied. Now, I do believe that there are a lot of disgruntled ALP and Green voters at the moment, and so I think by being on the ballot, I've picked up some of those for sure. Now, on the day of the election, I chose to be handing out the How to Vote cards at the West End Primary School, which, as I mentioned, is the most progressive suburb in Griffith, or in Brisbane, actually. And I had a fantastic reception there, a lot of conversations. A lot of the other volunteers for the other parties were saying to me they noticed I was often the only person that electors were taking a How to Vote card from. So it was becoming obvious, even to the ALP, that something was going on. I can't explain why, though. Was that their decision on the day? Had they pre-planned that? It's hard to say. But I did have an indication it was going to happen because Brisbane Times, which is an online news website, part of Fairfax, did a snap poll about 4 days prior. And I polled really high on the poll as well. Just after the Greens, basically the same. So people's intentions were then, therefore, basically with us even before the day of the election.
Right, yeah. See, my little theory is just that we might be seeing a bit of growing, not to dismiss your amazing magnetism, of course, but my theory is that we might be seeing a bit of brand recognition.
Yeah.
That that you know, at the federal election last year, that you know, a lot of people were seeing us for the first time, and you know, of course, on your first exposure, you're just going to think, "Oh, Pirate Party, what's that?" But this time around, they're like, "Yeah, I saw them last time. You know, this is obviously not a 5-minute party."
Yep.
Yeah, we're starting to get a bit of brand recognition.
Mm.
So that's what I'm hoping anyway, is that we're only going to see it increase as we go from election to election.
Yeah, absolutely. That's right. I mean, we've now, again, got a huge amount of attention because of this result. I was called the day after, on the Monday for an interview with ABC Brisbane. Because the journalists wanted to specifically speak about us being the only minor party to break 1,000 votes. So, again, it's got us attention all over again. So that puts us in an awesome place for the WA election, which is coming up, and also for the next federal election.
Yep, building the momentum. That's what it's all about.
That's right.
Now, the main reason I brought you onto the show today is because I was hoping you could give some inside perspective on what it's like to be a candidate and run a campaign so that other members might feel encouraged to do the same. So let's rewind the timeline to the start and walk through it. Now, the election was announced on Monday, January 6. Rudd's resignation meant a by-election would have to happen at some point. Had you already thought about standing as a candidate before the 6th of January when it was announced?
No, I hadn't. Not at all.
No? So it wasn't on the radar at all? Okay.
Nope.
Now, your candidacy was announced on Pirate Party Australia's website on January 15,
mm-hmm.
which was one day before nominations closed. Was that sort of, was that the day you decided to do it at all? Or, you know, what went into your decision to nominate?
Well, essentially, I was approached by, mm-hmm. you know, the relevant people within the party to do that. I did want...
We'll call them the usual suspects. They know who they are.
I had a very short time period in which to make up my mind about that. But, I decided that had to be done, you know. Basically, I thought I was, after the experience from last time, I could bring that experience mm-hmm. on board for this one, and I was the best candidate.
Okay. Now, so nominations closed on the 16th, and at that point you had 23 days to go.
Mm-hmm.
What happened next? Like, what was the first thing to do after nominations closed and you knew you were going to be on the ballot?
There was a lot of frantic National Council and election meetings. I guess most importantly, in a small time frame like that, was to organise volunteers. We needed volunteers to be handing out how to vote cards at as many polling booths as possible in the electorate. There's 46 booths. So we don't even have a very high number of members of Pirate Party here in Queensland. So it was always going to be a challenge to try and get all of those booths covered. As it was in the end, we covered about 20 of them. So we got about halfway there. So that was, you know, a not bad result. We also needed to organise all of the election material, you know, core flutes, the how to vote cards, the design, things like that. So that was all organised very quickly. You know, kudos go out to Brendan and all the other members of the NC involved in that for making that happen so quickly.
With the volunteers, did you get a lot of support from the membership? You were saying there weren't a lot of members in the area, or did you have to rope in friends and family as well?
Yeah, no, look, I could rely totally on Pirate Party here in Queensland. We have, when we have meetings up here, we have a core group of maybe, you know, it could vary anywhere between, say, anywhere between 4 and 10 people, but generally it's a small group. Mm-hmm. But it's great to see, you know, another sort of 10 or so come out of the woodwork to help out for this. So...
That's a really good result.
Yeah, that's right. So I met some new members I've never met before that, you know, in fact, I didn't know they were members of the party. I didn't know they were floating around in Brisbane. So yeah, that was really great, obviously.
Well, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Good to hear that people would, you know, come together in the time of need.
That's right.
Now, I had a look at your candidate page on our website, which also has images of the How to Vote card. But before you tell me how all that information came together, I have to say that I love the picture of you with the parrot. Tell me about the parrot.
Yeah, the parrot. The parrot's name is Bodhi. There is a place that my partner and I go and stay at in Byron Bay, up in the hills outside of Byron, whenever we can, you know, for holidays, long weekends, whenever. We've become quite good friends with the people who own the property. Basically, they're just some hippies who live out there. They have this fantastic property. They've built a couple of cottages on the property and rent them out to, you know, they don't advertise. They just keep it very quiet and we go and stay in this cottage. Bodhi is their sort of half wild, half domestic parrot. It just lives on the property with them. It knows me now. So the day that I arrived, last time I went there, Bodhi saw me. He came flying down on my shoulder and that photo was taken at that point. But yeah, that's the story behind Bodhi the parrot. He's just my little mate. She lives up in the hills outside Byron.
And when you're putting the page together, you're just like, oh, I'm a pirate. I have a photo of a parrot.
Yeah, it was my Twitter avatar.
Gotta have that one.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's my Twitter avatar. But, you know, everyone else on the National Council thought that was, you know, that had to be my photo. I guess that had become my brand, that he was my mascot. they also like the way I put in a green filter and, you know, made it very... Made me look very green, as in environmentally, you know, focused green. So,
okay, now back to the candidate profile and the How to Votes. Tell me about the process of bringing all that content together. I can imagine some of it's probably boilerplate, but, you know, like what input did you have into, you know, what issues were highlighted and things like that?
Yeah, look, I had 100% say in that and... control, I guess, for want of a better word, in the direction I wanted my campaign to take, and importantly, what I wanted to campaign upon. I chose to campaign on the subject of the environment, specifically the Great Barrier Reef issue, because that had just broken around the same time. Asylum seekers and the TPP as well. I got feedback from a couple of people I know who live in the electorate and, you know, both said to me that it was national issues that were important to the people of Griffith, not local issues, you know, not things like roads and transport. It's a pretty affluent electorate, so people aren't concerned with, you know, those low-level everyday things. You know, they've got Brisbane City Council to look after that. So it was the national issues that people were interested in. So I just tapped into what those issues were, and that's what they were, you know, asylum seekers and environment, climate change was another one. And, of course, the big one for me was always going to be to talk about the TPP wherever I possibly could because if no one else is talking about it. So, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, if they're focused on national issues, that does play well to our sort of background and our policies. How did you get the word out to the electorate? I know you mentioned you had core flutes. Did you do any, like, letterbox dropping? And the core flutes in particular, were they just sort of the ones that we used in the federal election? Or did you have one made up with your own face on it, like the standard election core flute that you see around the place?
So look, this time around we had a new graphic designer, Jared Bevere. He's a member of the party, and we did do a significant redesign. So the core flutes and the How to Vote cards were consistent in their design and their colour. Both were a pale blue colour. Both carried the same photo of me, both used the same fonts, same colour for the fonts, for it, and so on and so forth. A large number of How to Vote cards printed up and sent to me prior to election day. We did letterbox dropping with those and also campaigning at a local market on one Sunday where a lot of people in the electorate go to. It's a very popular market. Stood there and handed them out. So yeah, we did. We also one day went and stood on an intersection, on busy intersections in the electorate, and just held up the Pirate Party banners. Yeah, and that got a fantastic reception. Loads of people driving by, honking their horns, giving us the thumbs up. And that when people gave us the thumbs up, I knew that that was brand recognition. They were giving us the thumbs up because they knew what the Pirate Party was. They were, otherwise, yeah. They just wouldn't be doing that. So that was fantastic to see. Yeah. People stopping at the lights. Some would wind down their window and ask us what our policies were or what we were all about. So. It was fantastic.
God, that'd be a good way to sharpen your elevator pitch.
Yeah, that's right.
Kind of long before the light goes green.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Now, I know you did some broadcast interviews. How did they come about? And, what was the process of, how did they contact you and what did you have to do to go and get those recorded?
Yeah, now this is the great thing. Now, I work in the PR industry, so I know how it works. And I know that the majority of people, or a lot of people who get media, they've had to ask for it. It's the a PR person going to a media outlet and pitching a story. We're extremely lucky is we've never had to do that. For all the media coverage we have, it's media coming to us, which is just fantastic. So, the interviews that I had during the time, it appears that they've contacted the party via the website, basically, just contacted the media team and calls have then been directed to me. But, that's something I find really exciting as well, that we've got media coming to us, not the other way around.
Okay, and what did you end up on? Was it like TV or radio? Or?
No TV. Now, what did I do? I did ABC Radio the night of the Candidate Cam Forum. I was interviewed after that. As I said before, I appeared on ABC Radio the day after the election to talk about the result. I was interviewed by a journalist for a News Corp paper here in Brisbane and had a photographer come around here to my place and take a photo of me. So that was good. Though that was an interesting article because that same journalist also spoke to a Griffith University professor who said that minor party candidates are just people basically who are posing as minor parties but are really just pressure groups. So they were trying to insinuate in this article that Pirate Party are pressure groups instead of being a legit party. Mm. So yes, I had my first experience of being duped a little bit by a journo, but that's okay. and then I did a fair bit of local, more community radio, 4ZZZ, SYN Melbourne, 2SER Sydney. Yeah, I think I've
covered.
Wow,
that's a lot. Well done. So finally, election day was February 8. What did you do on election day?
Yeah, so election day was getting up bright and early, 6 a.m. to be at the polling booth for opening time at 8 a.m. Headed straight over to the booth, and that's when people start arriving to vote. So that is pretty much setting up call flutes. You set up your little space because, all the different volunteers from different parties are all gathered outside, so it's important.
Yes, I do know because I did this for the election in September.
Yep. Okay.
Up here in Newcastle.
Yeah.
Stood up for like 12 hours straight.
Exactly. By the end of the 12 hours, I had to go for a walk around the block just to move my legs a bit and just, it's hard just standing still like that. But it was a matter of handing out how to vote cards, approaching, electors, saying that I was the candidate. Hi, I'm Mel Thomas. I'm the candidate for the Pirate Party. And taking it from there, depending on the response. It's important to never get pushy. If someone's not interested, just drop it. There's no point getting, aggressively pursuing them. But, be ready to talk if someone wants to know all about us.
Finally, what I want to ask is there anything that you would do differently next time?
I guess
Like, is there a particular thing that you're like, oh, that didn't go so well? maybe next time we'll do that a bit differently.
Yeah. Look, next time I'm a work in progress myself. You know, I've never been exposed to having to do media interviews before or speak in public or do speeches ever. But, you know, I've attended a lot of rallies in my time, but always as an attendee. But since I've been in the Pirate Party, I've been approached to speak at rallies. So, and I've suddenly been thrust into the limelight, so to speak. So I'm getting better and better at that all the time. With each interview I do, each speech I do, it gets better. But they can always improve. If I could do it all again, you know, at the candidate forum where I spoke, I would probably sell myself even better than I did. I mean, obviously, I think I spoke well and picked up. I picked up a lot of applause there, you know, while I was speaking, and I could tell the audience was right behind me. But I don't think they needed to know about the history of the Pirate Party, which I spoke about. I would probably next time just go straight into policies and how our policies are better than everybody else's policies, and how a vote for the Pirate Party, you know, is going to deliver the change that people want in Australia. Apart from that, I'm really happy with the campaign and how it was run.
Now, did you know it was announced this week that the results for the 2013 Western Australian Senate election have been declared void?
Yes.
Yes, you did, yeah. I only found out about it yesterday. But this means that we're now taking candidate nominations for the Western Australian Senate election.
That's right.
We actually had no candidates nominations for 2013, so I'm just really hoping that our chat today might have inspired some of our crew in Western Australia to take up the torch and hit the campaign trail. And on that note, I'm going to say thank you so much for your time today, Melanie. I really appreciate you coming and talking to me about your experience.
Thanks, Sam. That was fantastic.
Last week on February 11th, Pirate Party Australia joined other activist organisations and political parties around the world to protest mass government surveillance in an online protest called The Day We Fight Back. The global action sought to put pressure on lawmakers to end the mass surveillance that has been exposed through leaks from whistleblower and US intelligence contractor Edward Snowden. The websites of over 5,000 participating organisations, including Reddit, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, Greenpeace, and of course our own website at pirateparty.org.au, were blacked out with a large cover banner in protest, which was seen by 38 million people and prompted 300,000 signatures to the official petition. The Day We Fight Back also sought to highlight the injustice of heavy-handed enforcement against activists like Aaron Schwartz, who took his own life in 2011 because he was unable to bear the cost or stress of the defensive charges brought against him for his digital activism, which carried a maximum sentence of 50 years in prison for the crime of copying and making available to everyone a major research database that was paid for with US taxpayers' dollars. The Day We Fight Back was actually raised in Australian Parliament because Green Senator Scott Ludlam directly questioned the Attorney General George Brandis on what was being done in response to the public debate on government surveillance.
The question is to the Attorney General. Thanks, President. I refer to the more than 6,000 organisations that have joined a global internet blackout against indiscriminate government surveillance. They're joining their voices with business, civil society organisations and even senior Republican and Democratic congressmen and women to demand reforms to the dragnet surveillance conducted by the US NSA. Does this government, and the Attorney-General particularly, recognise the legitimate concerns of Australians about indiscriminate surveillance, or does he honestly believe that there are no reforms necessary here in Australia?
The Attorney-General, Senator Brandis.
Well, thank you very much indeed, through you, Mr President, to Senator Ludlam for that question. And I note that Senator Ludlam has today published in the Guardian website an article in praise of the American traitor Edward Snowden, in praise of the American traitor Edward Snowden, displaying a photograph of a bus bearing the signage, "Thank you, Edward Snowden." And under the headline, "Today is the day we fight back." Now, Senator Ludlam, you celebrate and you make a hero of this man who, through his criminal dishonesty and his treachery to his country, has put lives, including Australian lives, at risk. And I wonder how you can sit in this parliament, Senator Ludlam, and hold your head up high when you celebrate a man who, through criminal conduct and treachery, has put Australian lives at risk. Now, Senator Ludlam, you should know. You should know, because you are your party's spokesman on that this area, that the Australian intelligence agencies operate under a strong framework of surveillance and under very strong statutory obligations and accountability obligations. That framework includes being responsible to a parliamentary committee of which you yourself are a member, Senator Ludlam. That is the Senate Standing Committee on Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade, and the Senate Standing Committee on Legal and Constitutional Affairs. They are also responsible to the Parliamentary Joint Committee on Intelligence and Security. They are responsible to the Inspector General of Intelligence and Security, an independent statutory officer. And they are, as I said a moment ago, under a framework of...
Order. Time's expired. Order. Senator Ludlam. Senator Ludlam.
Thanks, Mr. President. Well, what a chilling response. I thank Senator Brandis for...
Order. Just come to the question.
Thank you. I thank Senator Brandis for the bluntness of his answer. Senator Brandis, are you aware, and has you or your office evaluated any of the proposals for serious law reform put to President Obama in the case of indiscriminate surveillance by the NSA? And does the attorney believe that any of those proposals could be relevant here in Australia?
The Attorney General.
I'll come to your question in a second, Senator, but if I may just finish what I was saying in answer to your primary question. The operation of the Australian intelligence agencies is undergirded by strong statutory accountability requirements and oversight.
Order, Senator Brandis. Senator Brandis. Senator Ludlam is on his feet. Senator
Ludlam. President, it's on the point of relevance. The attorney has just opened his answer by explaining that it won't be relevant to the question I've just asked. Can we just draw your attention to the question I just put to you, please?
Order. The minister needs to address the question. The minister still has 48 seconds.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. I just wanted to complete my answer to your first question, Senator Ludlam.
Order.
That's all. But. To come directly to your first supplementary question, Senator Ludlam, yes, I have studied President Obama's remarks carefully, and the Australian government Australian governments of both sides, I might say, of this aisle, are always alert to ensure that the statutory framework which undergirds and provides for the accountability mechanism of our intelligence agencies are as appropriate and relevant as possible. Nobody says that the laws should never be reformed. They should always be kept under review. There actually is an independent advisor on terrorism laws.
Order.
Whose remit
Time
is broad
has
enough
expired.
To extend
Time's
to...
expired. Senator Ludlam.
I'm aware of that, Senator Brandis. We helped establish it. Will the government commit...
Order. Just ask the question.
We've hit a bit of a nerve, haven't we? Will... Senator Faulkner is indeed owed some credit for that. Can the attorney tell us whether the government would commit to amendments or reforms to the Five Eyes Agreement on acceptable limits to data collection and storage so that the data on Australians is kept under control of Australians?
The Minister.
Well, Mr. President, the Australian government certainly isn't going to be commenting publicly on what discussions it may have with other nations in relation to the operation or the scope of intelligence services.
Now, anyone with even a passing familiarity with the debate should be shocked by the Attorney General's dismissive and, in my opinion, uninformed attitude. Later that same day, Senator Ludlam entered an appropriately scorching speech into the parliamentary record in response.
On a separate matter, thanks, Deputy President. Look, I rise to just add some comments and some thoughts on the extraordinary display by our...
So you're moving to take note of the answers of...
Of Senator Brandis.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Ludlam. Deputy President. Always attention to detail. On another matter, the matter of the embarrassing and borderline hysterical display that was just put to this chamber by our Attorney General, the highest law officer in the land, behaving like an infant. It's like having a debate with a four-year-old, and I think we deserve better. This parliament deserves better. And the millions of people around this country and around the world who have legitimate and deep concerns about the surveillance activities of the US NSA and its partner agencies, including those of Australians, to be treated with the kind of display of contempt, and I use that word carefully, that was put on the record by the Attorney General just now, is completely unacceptable. If the Attorney's not up to the job, he should set it aside for somebody who is. It's the February 11th today, as I'm making this contribution, and around the world, more than 6,000 organisations, companies, civil society organisations, and groups like the Australian Greens, with user populations ranging from sub-niche to hundreds of millions, are blacked out. And this is a global internet blackout against government surveillance. It is good timing for us that it's the first day of Parliament, and that's why I'm pleased to be able to add a contribution here on behalf of the Australian Greens. The action was initiated by colleagues in the United States, not the usual suspects at all, but those in the technology industry, civil society organisations and groups like the ACLU, and people from right across the political spectrum in the United States. Republican Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner, one of the authors of the Patriot Act, when he read and understood, as somebody who understands the architecture of the US security estate better than most, when he understood what it was that the Snowden releases through the Guardian newspaper had revealed, he said this is well beyond what the Patriot Act allows. In other words, he's intimating that, in fact, the activities of these agencies is illegal. Lying to congressional committees is unlawful in the United States. And so the debate that's occurring in the US is actually very, very interesting. As the powers of national security agencies are brought into question and people actually have some truth to deal with and some facts on the table, the debate is fascinating about what the role of these agencies is against the backdrop of the US Constitution and the Bill of Rights and protections drafted by people who evidently had much greater understanding of the potential for tyranny that lies under unchecked government surveillance than our own Attorney General obviously does. The debate that is unfolding in the United States is actually, I think, profound. And in exchange, what we get here in Australia is the kind of infantile display that was put on the record earlier by our Attorney General. It's completely unacceptable. Senator Brandis accused Mr. Snowden, Mr. Edward Snowden, a whistleblower who I hold in extremely high regard, as do, I imagine, the majority of Australians and millions of people around the world, of a traitor. You know, you can almost see the spittle flying from his lips. Nothing was justified in the statement or the accusation, in fact, that the revelations put into the public domain through The Guardian, The New York Times, the ABC, news organisations around the world doing their job, that Mr. Snowden had risked Australians. No evidence at all. They said exactly the same thing about the WikiLeaks revelations, the State Department cables, the war logs that disclosed war crimes, the State Department cables that disclosed illegal activities by the United States State Department in the UN. No comment at all from the Liberal Party over those revelations. No comment at all over the fact that it appears these agencies have acted unlawfully in the United States, and that a detailed set of reform proposals is now before President Obama. Instead, in Australia, complete silence, not simply silence, but the kind of contempt that we were shown by our Attorney General this afternoon. Late last year, in fact, in the closing days of the 2013 Parliament, the Greens were able to initiate an inquiry, Senate inquiry, to the Legal and Constitutional Affairs Ledge Committee into the surveillance regime that prevails in Australia. I acknowledge my Labor Party colleagues for supporting that reference, and also Senator Xenophon, who has made his own concerns on behalf of his constituents clear on these matters. This inquiry is the first and perhaps best opportunity we will have to shed some light on the kind of issues here that many of us in this parliament, reflecting the views in the broader community, believe are extremely important and urgent to address, and are hoping that our present Attorney General's tenure is as brief as possible so that somebody can come into that office with some respect to the positions that have been put that these things need to be urgently reformed and not to be treated with the kind of display that was put on the record earlier. Thank the Chair.
The question is that the motion moved by Senator Ludlam be agreed to. Those of that opinion say aye. To the contrary, no. The ayes have it.
I'll leave the final word on this matter to Simon Frew, President of Pirate Party Australia, who had this to say on our website last week. We need safeguards to protect our civil liberties. Just because the technology is there to cheaply spy on every person who uses a computer or mobile phone, it does not mean that it should happen. Democracy requires privacy, and the surveillance regime the government has signed up to under the Five Eyes program is a direct assault on the civil liberties of everyone. Citizens need privacy to be able to speak freely, criticise injustice, and hold the government to account. The surveillance regime exposed by Edward Snowden shows a fundamental shift in the relationship between people and the state. The balance needs to be turned back the other way. While we're talking about Attorney General Brandis, the Australian Law Reform Commission's final report into copyright and the digital economy landed in Parliament last week, and soon after, Attorney General Brandis made a presentation to the Australian Digital Alliance Forum where he announced that the government is preparing for a crackdown on internet piracy through ISP-level enforcement of a three-strike-style system that have been tried and failed several times elsewhere. He even trotted out the standard copyright industry propaganda of conflating infringement with theft. Attorney General Brandis said, "The illegal downloading of Australian films online is a form of theft. I say Australian films, but of course the illegal downloading of any protected content is a form of theft. The government will be considering possible mechanisms to provide a legal incentive for an internet service provider to cooperate with copyright owners in preventing infringement on their systems and networks. This may include looking carefully at the merits of a scheme whereby ISPs are required to issue graduated warnings to consumers who are using websites to facilitate piracy." So, look out, because your ISP may soon be required to monitor all of your communications so they can send you fines and or disconnect your internet service. Moving on to coming events, between the 15th and 17th of next month, there is a rally being held in cities across Australia called March in March. This rally is being held to express a vote of no confidence against the Abbott government. I will be going to the Newcastle rally, and I know that many other pirate members will also be attending their nearest rallies too. The march organisers are not pushing any one particular issue, but if you're considering going at all, then I'm sure you don't need someone else to tell you what angers you about the Abbott government. The event is primarily organised on Facebook, so search there for March in March. There is a separate page for each city where a rally is being held, so like the one near you for more information. As mentioned previously, there will soon be another Western Australian Senate election. This means Pirate Party Australia are looking for at least two nominations for candidates to stand in that election on a group ticket. If you are inspired by our earlier feature on the Griffith election, then please point your browser at preselection.pirateparty.org.au and fill out the nomination form. Of course, you must be a party member, and you will need another member to second your nomination. If you're not sure who can do that for you, then I'm sure you can find someone in our mailing lists or IRC chat to help you out. On Tuesday of this week, we have our general meeting in IRC starting at 8 p.m. If you're new to the Pirate Party and aren't sure where to start, even if you are not a member, this is a good place to go. Just go to our website, select Communicate from the top menu, and then IRC Web Chat, and it will drop you straight into the right channel. On Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. we have the Privacy Taught Working Group meeting. If you'd like to get more involved in the nitty-gritty of party business, this would be a good meeting to attend. I know the working groups are always looking for people to help. And on Thursday night at 8:30 p.m. we have the National Council meeting, where generally only National Council members can speak, but anyone is welcome to observe. And that brings us to the end of the show. I usually end with a quote, and this episode is no different, though this one is several paragraphs long. It comes from the English fantasy author Neil Gaiman, who said, "When the web started, I used to get really grumpy with people because they put my poems up, they put my stories up, they put my stuff up on the web. I had this belief, which was completely erroneous, that if people put your stuff up on the web and you didn't tell them to take it down, you would lose your copyright, which actually is simply not true. And I also got very grumpy because I felt like they were pirating my stuff, that it was bad. And then I started to notice that two things seemed much more significant, one of which was places where I was being pirated, particularly Russia, where people were translating my stuff into Russian and spreading around into the world, I was selling more and more books. People were discovering me through being pirated. Then they were going out and buying the real books. And when a new book would come out in Russia, it would sell more and more copies. I thought this was fascinating, and I tried a few experiments. Some of them are quite hard, you know, persuading my publisher, for example, to take one of my books and put it out for free. We took American Gods, a book that was still selling and selling very well, and for a month they put it up completely for free on their website. You could read it and you could download it. What happened was sales of my books through independent bookstores, because that's all we were measuring it through, went up the following month 300%. I started to realize that actually you're not losing books. You're not losing sales by having stuff out there. When I give a big talk now on these kinds of subjects and people say, well, what about the sales that I'm losing through having stuff copied, through having stuff floating out there? I started asking audiences to just raise their hands for one question, which is, I'd say, okay, do you have a favorite author? They'd say yes, and I'd say good. What I want is for everybody who discovered their favorite author by being lent a book, put up your hands. And then, anybody who discovered your favorite author by walking into a bookstore and buying a book, raise your hands. And it's probably about 5-10% of the people who actually discovered an author who's their favorite author, who is the person who they buy everything of, they buy the hardbacks and they treasure the fact that they got this author. Very few of them bought the book. They were lent it. They were given it. They did not pay for it. And that's how they found their favorite author. And I thought, you know, that's really all this is. It's people lending books. And you can't look on that as a loss of a sale. It's not a lost sale. Nobody who would have bought your book is not buying it because they can find it for free. What you're actually doing is advertising. You're reaching more people. You're raising awareness. Understanding that gave me a whole new idea of the shape of copyright and of what the web was doing. Because the biggest thing the web is doing is allowing people to hear things, allowing people to read things, allowing people to see things that they would never have otherwise seen. And I think, basically, that's an incredibly good thing. The Pirate Party Australia webcast, including all music, is written, recorded and produced by Sam Kearns for Pirate Party Australia and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 Unported license. Thanks for listening.